And I'm going to read now the passage of the sutra which describes the appearance of the stupa. And you'll find that it gives a sort of idealized description of the sort of monument that must have been very common in India at that time. So the sutra says, I'm afraid the translation isn't very literary or very poetical as it perhaps should be. Then there arose a stupa consisting of seven precious substances from the place of the earth opposite the Lord, the assembly being in the middle. A stupa 500 yojanas in height. A yojana is about 7 or 8 miles. 500 yojanas in height and proportionate in circumference. After its rising, the stupa stood in the sky, sparkling, beautiful, nicely decorated with 5,000 successive terraces of flowers, adorned with many thousands of arches, embellished by thousands of banners and triumphal streamers, hung with thousands of jewel garlands, and with hour plates and bells, and emitting the scent of xanthochymus and sandal, which scent filled this whole world. Its row of umbrellas rose so far on high as to touch the abodes of the four guardians of the horizon and the gods. It consisted of seven precious substances, viz. Gold, silver, lapis lazuli, musara galva, emerald, red coral, and Karaketana stone. This stupa of precious substances once formed, the gods of paradise strewed and covered it with mandarava and great mandara flowers. And from that stupa of precious substances there issued this voice, excellent, excellent Lord Shakyamuni, thou hast well expounded this dharma paryaya of the lotus of the true law. So it is, Lord, so it is, Sugata. So this is the text, this is the passage, this is the description of the stupa. So once again we have to ask ourselves what it represents, what the stupa stands for. And in order to answer this question, in part at least, we'll have first to go into the symbolism of the five elements, which brings us to our second heading, the five element symbolism. The five elements are the traditional ones, that is to say, earth, water, fire, air, and an element which is translated into English sometimes as ether and sometimes as space, but we'll take a look at that in a minute. Now, the fact that these terms are used, earth, water, fire, air, shouldn't cause us to think that these are to be understood as material elements. We mustn't take them in that literal sense. What we translate as earth, water, fire, air, and so on are symbolized by the material elements, but are not the material elements themselves. So what are they? When we use these symbols of earth, water, fire, air, what do we really mean? What do we really have in mind? Or what does the Buddhist tradition have in mind? What do the builders of the stupas have in mind? Well, these elements symbolize or represent not material entities, but different forms, different kinds, if you like, different hypostases, if you like, of energy. Take earth. What is earth? Earth is not something you scoop up from the ground. It's not matter or anything like that. Earth, the symbol earth, represents energy, but energy in a state of contraction. Energy in a state of cohesion. That which makes everything stick together, as it were. Not unlike the law of gravitation in science. It's the principle, if you like, of solidity. So earth represents energy, yes, but energy, as it were, locked up. Energy blocked. Energy even frozen. energy petrified, energy crystallized. This is what is meant by earth, not earth in the literal sense. And then water. What is water? It's not the stuff you drink. It's energy. But energy in a state, not a complete blockage, partial blockage, energy in a state of what we may describe as oscillation or undulation. Not energy completely blocked, completely locked up, but at the same time, not energy really and truly free either. It just oscillates. That is to say, it just goes backwards and forwards, between two points. So this is the kind, this is the type, this is the hypostasis, if you like, of energy, symbolized by, represented by the element water. And then fire. What's fire? What does that represent? This is comparatively easy. Fire, of course, we know always mounts upward. You kindle a fire, the flame goes up. It never goes down, not of its own accord. Always goes straight up. So fire symbolizes energy moving in an upward direction. Up and up, ascending. Sublimating, if you like. And air, what about air? Air is energy which is not just expanding, and not just ascending, it's also descending. It's also spreading out on both sides. In other words, air is energy in a state of expansion, or energy which is, as it were, diffusing itself in all directions from one central point, diffusing itself in all directions of space. Now what about the element which we have to translate sometimes as ether, sometimes as space? This is much more difficult to explain. In the original it is Akasha. Akasha, the Sanskrit and also Pali word Akasha, is derived from a root meaning to shine, like the sky. And the word is sometimes applied to the sky or to the firmament, but this is not its real meaning. Akasha, ether, space, call it what you will, this represents what we may describe as the primordial energy of which the other four, the so-called earth, water, fire, air, are grosser manifestations. They are, as it were, like the waves, waves of different shapes, different forms, different configurations, but it, the ether, the space, the akasha, the brightness, the shining, that is like the sea itself. We can even say that in some contexts at least, akasha stands halfway, as it were, between what we call matter and what we call spirit or consciousness.